a lot of beginning investors should be pretty hands-on with their real estate until they learn. So you know what your expectations are, you know when they're being met, and you know when a property manager is falling short of those expectations.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. If you're paying attention, you know that you only make money when you work. It might be great money, but it's dependent on you. The information on this podcast will help you solve that. We interview experts and provide analysis into financial freedom through commercial real estate. Why? To help physicians like you thrive. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Surgeon Syndicate. This is your host, Dr. Michael McManus, and we are here today with Jonathan Hayek. Jonathan is a public school teacher who began investing in real estate with only a few dollars, and through grit and creative strategies, he built a portfolio of small multifamily properties and now is using real estate to fuel his lifestyle and family time and allow him to play in the mountain. Jonathan now invests in larger commercial assets, preferring triple net industrial properties. He enjoys inspiring others, speaking about the freedom of real estate, traveling, and ultra running. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Great to be here.
That's a great intro. So just tell our listeners a little bit more. We were just talking off camera. I guess it was off camera before we started recording. A lot of our listeners are people who are newer to investing or are now looking to invest passively. So you started out with smaller multifamily properties or single family. Tell us a little bit how you got into it and then your journey now to triple net leases.
Sure. So I started my working career as a public school special education teacher, totally broke. And I realized that that work, as kind of noble and wonderful as teaching is, it was not ultimately going to get me where I wanted to go, both in terms of financial freedom and time freedom. And so as I was still teaching special ed, I bought one of my first properties in 2017, and the idea was to start flipping houses. And so I created a pipeline of single-family homes, and I would flip houses, and I would use the capital. The idea was to use the capital created from those single-family flips to buy small multifamily properties. Small multifamily properties, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. The idea was to create an empire of small multifamily properties. And it worked for a while. When I started doing this, I could find these properties. They were cash flow and they were great deals, and my plan was working. But then as COVID came, and really post-COVID, the real estate industry just really blew up, and it became really difficult to continue to find these deals. Not to mention, I started having kids, and I now have two kids, and flipping houses can be a really intense endeavor. From finding properties, you're constantly marketing, you're constantly bird-dogging, trying to find new properties to purchase. And as my family was growing, I just realized that this lifestyle of flipping houses, being a very time-intensive and capital-intensive endeavor, was not ultimately my future. And so fortunately, I was able to build up quite a bit of equity from the small multifamily properties and my flips. And I really started thinking, well, what else is out there? Are there other options in real estate that are maybe higher price tag options and might be more passive? And so I considered going the large multifamily route. But as I got more experience in apartments and the tenants and toilets and termites and all that kind of stuff, I decided that I did not want to scale my business in multifamily. It was just not going to provide the lifestyle, the passive lifestyle that I was wanting. And so I started looking into non-residential options like triple net industrial properties. And so these are larger properties occupied by businesses, and these businesses take care of almost all of the expenses for these properties: taxes, insurance, maintenance. I'm still the owner, but these tenants have long-term leases and high rent leases, and so It translates very well for me. I've developed a strategy in this asset class that so far is working really well, and I'm happy to go into more detail about any of this if you'd like.
Yeah, we'll get back to your strategy because I love your strategy, and it's something that I think will be new to some of our listeners of things they haven't heard before. But going back to your multifamily experience, because I think this is where, it's where I started, where everybody starts. You buy a single family or a duplex because it makes sense. We've all rented. You're like, okay, let's be the landlord on the other side. And the idea of flipping, I think that most people, by the time they have money to invest, maybe have bought a house and sold it for more, hopefully, not for less, and have put some work into it. But when you start to have a full-time job and a family, and flipping houses becomes another job, how much time are you putting into your flipping biz outside of your teaching job?
It was more than full-time. So when I was still teaching and I started flipping houses, I was flipping houses on nights, weekends, holidays, school breaks. I was beyond a full-time worker. But truthfully, that was the time to hustle. I knew that I had steady income from teaching and benefits and all that kind of stuff. And I was just barely getting by. I was making 50 grand a year. And over time, if I stuck with teaching over the long term, if I was a teacher for 30 or 35 years, I'd end up making 75 or 80 grand. And as I started doing that math in my head, I just realized that that was not going to get me where I wanted to go. And so I realized that I was at the point in life where it was time to hustle. I had extra time that was not being well spent. And so I've kind of always been a hard worker and a hustler. And so I was willing to take my nights, weekends, and holidays and start flipping houses. And so it was summer breaks. I was driving a Toyota Prius at the time, and so I was bootstrapping it. I've always been a hard worker and a DIYer and a bootstrapper, and so I would haul sheets of drywall in my Prius and boxes of tiles and boxes of cement and all that kind of stuff. So I'd be running to hardware stores 10 o'clock at night to get supplies for the next day, make sure the contractor had doorknobs and all that kind of stuff. I was willing to do that hard work. And my thought process was I could hire that stuff out, but I had some skills in the area. I did a lot of work myself, not all the work myself, but I would do a lot of the work myself, like laying flooring and tiling showers and painting, things like that. And I was able to get ahead so much faster by doing so much of that work myself rather than contracting it all out. So I could pay a painter $7,000 to paint the inside of this house, or I could do it myself for the price of materials for $500. And so in a lot of cases, that's your profit margin right there. And so if it's a matter of doing stuff myself, I was willing to do it and it really paid off.
It's great when you start looking at that, what is your time worth? And I love how you laid out that you had a job that had benefits and it provided all your core stuff, but it wasn't that you could say, okay, I make X amount at that job and I'll just put some more time into it because it was constrained. And so you said, okay, I'm going to take my time and I'm going to do this and it's going to be more worthwhile. And somebody else may look, if you're a doctor or you have a profession that you can say, okay, let's just add 3 more patients to the end of the day, or we'll open the clinic on that holiday and maybe I'll make more money there and I'm better off paying somebody to paint than doing it myself. But that's everybody's situation is kind of different and looking at and figuring out the best way, what's the best thing I can do with my time to help me get ahead.
Yeah, that's a great point. And everyone's situation is so different. And for me, say I was on summer break and I was flipping this house and I had to demo the shower area and retile it. And so I might pay someone $4,000 to do that. Or I could do it myself and it would take me 3 days. So for me, a school teacher on my summer break, if I could save $4,000 and do it myself, it makes a lot of sense to me. And so I could translate that over the course of other jobs in the house, from laying floors to painting to other demo work. there are some things that are just outside of my skill set where I would just choose to outsource it because I would do a bad job with it, or it would take me so long to learn how to do it, and then it wouldn't look very good. And so there are things like that. And so it's a calculation, but other things that I'm comfortable with, like tiling showers and painting and flooring and demo work, I can do that myself. And it actually was a better use of my time than paying someone else to do it. I can't say that's true now at this stage of my journey, as I'm paying people more to do things like that. But at the time, it just made a lot of sense for me.
It's also, though, you gain this, that when you've done some of these things, when a contractor comes in and you're getting bids on jobs and you've done the job, you know what the job is. And it's not just comparing bids. You can talk to them and know what they're talking about. So there's other value with time that comes with that.
Absolutely. Yep. I feel really strongly that a lot of beginning investors should be pretty hands-on with their real estate until they learn. So whether it's property management or it is doing some stuff around the property, knowing what's involved, particularly property management, knowing what's involved so you know what your expectations are, you know when they're being met, and you know when a property manager is falling short of those expectations. And so with contractor work, if it's a big part of it is knowing what stuff costs. And so you know if a contractor's trying to pull one over on you, oh, materials cost this, materials cost that. Well, if you've done it before, you have a pretty good idea about what materials are going to cost. And so, yeah, just having some experience in the trenches, so to speak, gives you a really good idea about what your expectations should be moving forward when you're no longer in the trenches and you're hiring it out.
Yeah. And as you said, the property management too, if you own a property and you're having somebody else lease it out, especially a residential, and if you've never done your own leasing, which can be the most torturous part of it, but did you know what it involved? If they're like, oh yeah, we didn't fill it, you know whether they advertised it, you know whether they were arranging showings and whether they were doing the things it took. Because the first multifamily we bought, it was completely filled when we bought it, but there was one apartment changing and the new tenants come, and the old one was much dirtier and more wrecked than I thought it was. And the new tenants were like, we're not living here. And now it's empty. And now you're looking at it going, oh my goodness, we need to. So then we spent 3 months remodeling it. So from the get-go, the projections didn't work. But the learning experience of that, of kind of understanding, then when you look to a property manager and they tell you these things, that you know whether they're doing a good job or not, because not all property managers are the same.
Yeah, Mike, that's such a good point about property management and turning units over. So if you have at least some experience in leasing, you know how long it should take to rent that two-bedroom apartment. And so I still have some multifamily properties now, and I know it should really take 30 days or less to get that unit rented. I know what it's going to cost to turn it over from cleaning and touching up paint. And I know I should have a new tenant in there within 30 days. And so if down the line, I choose to outsource that to a property manager and it's taking 60 or 90 days and it's still not occupied, I know something is up because it really should be occupied during that time. And if they're doing a turnover and they're charging me $2,500 for the turnover, and I'm sitting here saying, I know it was in good condition, all it needed was a good cleaning. So it should have been less than $500. So just having a little better instinct is really valuable. And that's where having some sort of experience comes in.
Yes, this I just thought of because I don't know where your rentals are, but in college markets now, and I think this is new, kids are renting a year or 6 months in advance because we have a fourplex that's in a town that has a college. I guess it's college market. And we were renting for the first of the year for January 1st. And we had all these college kids going, yeah, I want it May 1st. I'm like, that's not what we're renting for. And I had no idea. And my daughter's a freshman in college, lives in the dorms. But she's like, no, Dad, you've got to rent stuff a year ahead of time. I was like, oh my goodness. But that would change. And I see now why people like college rentals a little more, some of the people I've talked to, because if you know your property is leased a year in advance or 6 months in advance, you didn't used to get that on a residential rental, not that I had seen before.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's trade-offs with everything. I have never done student housing myself. My only experience with student housing is from when I lived in an apartment in college. And there's trade-offs with everything. You do have that peace of mind of, okay, I know for next school year, it's already rented out. But you also know that you're probably going to have some more capital expenses with that unit. Those, depending on how or if at all you vet your tenants, there's probably going to be a little more wear and tear on those units than if you were renting to a 28-year-old professional who's an accountant, or maybe even a master's student, a grad school student for that matter. So there's trade-offs for everything. And with student housing, I imagine the spreadsheets and the pro formas might look really sweet, but my guess is some people, and maybe you'll have some experience with this in a little bit, my guess is that a lot of those spreadsheets and pro formas may not turn out quite as rosy as you predicted on the front end.
We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed, and my ability to start becoming work optional change when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel, and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course, and this is probably the most valuable set of information, the quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate and retail and industrial and office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital and let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward. Yeah, our experience has been, it hasn't been that students are all bad. They tend to need a little mothering when they come out of the dorms for the first time. And you kind of realize everybody comes from a different environment, but a lot of them just are lacking some life skills, and they'll come to their landlord sometimes with things they used to call mom about. But at the same time, I've had 35-year-old professionals that take worse care of than college kids. And when they call and request, they want new carpet put in their place after they had 5 puppies, which broke the lease, and you already didn't throw them out over that. And they're like, well, it stinks. And you're like, it stinks because you ruined it. So that goes into the next. So you went through that whole process, and I'm sure the tenants were some of the key drivers. The properties quit penciling out as far as making it worth the investment. But tell me a little bit more about your transition into industrial properties.
Sure. I was buying small multifamily properties off the MLS. I was buying 1% deals. And for those not familiar with the 1% metric, that was, say, you buy a duplex for $250,000, gross rents per month are $2,500. So that is just kind of back of the napkin math that tells me, hey, this is a deal worth looking at if it meets that 1% criteria. Early in my investing journey, I was buying those off the MLS, and there wasn't a surplus of them, but they would come up, I would buy them, and they were great cash flowing properties. And I did really well on a lot of those properties, but really post-COVID, those properties became much harder to come by. There became a much bigger spotlight on real estate as a wealth builder and income generator. And those 1% deals on the MLS became essentially non-existent. And this was also kind of coinciding with the time of my life where I had young kids. I wanted to be present for my kids, being home, taking them to daycare, helping my wife out around the house. And I didn't want to be working 40 plus hours a week on flips and managing properties, getting calls at night, getting calls on the weekends to go change batteries in a smoke detector or change batteries in a thermostat or shovel sidewalks, things like that. And so my first non-residential property was actually an office building. The town where I've done a lot of my investing is Cheyenne, Wyoming. There's a vacant office building. It was about 5,000 square feet, and I had been eyeing it for several months. It had been on the market for at least 9 months before I had closed on it. And I thought this was a really natural progression from multifamily to non-residential real estate. And it was. I didn't know what I didn't know, though. So my thought was this office building was already divided into individual offices. So I thought, hey, I can do the same thing with this office building that I do with my multifamily properties, except instead of leasing to people that need somewhere to live, I was going to be leasing to people who needed somewhere to work. So I had in my mind, I would lease to attorneys, accountants, massage therapists, anyone like this that just needs a spot outside the house. Because I think as we all have learned over the last few years, working from home is really challenging, especially if you've got kids, pets, distractions. It is really hard to have a home office. I'm in my home office right now, and every once in a while, my four-year-old will wander into the office when I'm on a podcast like this and jump on my lap. So I know from experience. And so that was my thought with this office building, that I could fill it up with people that need a place to work outside the house. There were tons of lessons learned on that property. The end of the story is I was successful. I did it. It took a little longer to lease up than I anticipated. It was a little more challenging to lease up, but I did it. I ended up with about 10 tenants in that property. And going back to my previous comments about the importance of getting experience, this property was so crucial to my understanding of commercial real estate. I learned how to find tenants. I learned what tenants were looking for in an office. I learned what they were willing to pay, what sort of amenities they wanted. I learned how to complete a commercial lease, how to negotiate those leases, what to do when someone wanted to break a lease, what to do when someone inquired for an office when I had no vacancy. So all of those lessons were so crucial to my development. And I've since sold that office property, made a nice profit on it, got paid to learn a lesson. So those are the best lessons to learn when you can get paid to learn the lessons. And I've now transitioned. I own a couple single tenant industrial properties. And that's an asset class that I'm really excited about.
So it's an interesting thing. As you moved down the scale to having fewer tenants, which is nice from a management perspective, but changes the risk a little bit. Tell me more about that. And I'm just saying this because I had a conversation yesterday with somebody who's a multifamily syndicator and is looking at doing some retail. And they put a 3-unit neighborhood retail center under contract. And they were like, if you've got one space empty, you are now 33% vacant, which in an apartment building is really bad. So how is that different as you shifted from having more tenants to having less tenants, but the impact on your vacancy if you don't get it rented? And how do you manage that?
I'll grant you that there is a higher chance of having more vacancy with single tenant properties. So with single tenant properties, occupancy is binary. Either you're 100% occupied or you're 0% occupied. I have one single tenant industrial property. The tenant's been there for 25 plus years. I have another single tenant industrial property. The tenant's been there for over 40 years. The flip side to these single tenant properties is that the tenants are extremely sticky. When you have people living in apartments, in many cases, that is a temporary solution for them. They've just graduated from college and they're waiting to buy their first home. They just got a job and they have a girlfriend, but they're not married yet. Well, 2 years down the line, they get married. They're going to be looking for a home. In multifamily properties, in general, there are always exceptions. Those are going to be shorter term tenants. You're going to have more turnover. You're going to have more maintenance. The management of multi-tenant, especially residential properties, is going to be more. That's just a fact. You're going to have more to do on multi-tenant residential properties. My single-tenant properties, like I said, I've had tenants occupy these spaces for decades. They're on long-term leases. I have one tenant on a 5-year lease. I have another tenant that I'm talking about a 15-year lease. These are triple net leases. The tenant is responsible for paying taxes, insurance, and maintenance. So when taxes increase, like they are in just about everywhere right now, the tenant is responsible for those tax increases. When the insurance increases, like insurance is increasing almost everywhere right now, the tenant is responsible for those increases. When it snows, when the lawn needs taken care of, when light bulbs need replaced, the tenant is responsible for those items. And so if you're buying desirable properties in areas with low vacancy, these properties are going to stay occupied. If a tenant maybe wants to leave, I'll give you an example. I have a property right now where the tenant's been there for over 40 years. And they've been forthcoming that this is not their ideal building. They would like something newer, nicer, and bigger. But when they go out into the market, there is literally nothing available. Outside of building something ground up outside of town, they have literally zero options of other places that they could move. And so these properties that I'm buying are in markets with extremely low vacancy rates, and there's an extremely high demand for these properties. And so on paper, you might say, oh, what if the tenant leaves? I feel really good that even if I should have some vacancy in the future, that this property is going to get leased up, likely at a higher rent amount in the future very quickly.
Thank you so much for joining us today here on Surgeon Syndicate. This has been an exceptional show today with Jonathan Hayek and some of this discussion of single-tenant industrial properties. And we're not done with this yet, so please come back and join us for the second half of our discussion with Jonathan Hayek here on Surgeon Syndicate. We'll get back to our show in a minute, but first I want to offer you an opportunity to accelerate your learning. My life changed and my ability to start becoming work optional changed when I gained the people and the knowledge to start investing in commercial real estate. One of the key people there was Ash Patel, and joining his Invest Beyond Multifamily Mastermind. With that, I had the people and the knowledge. Well, that mastermind is no longer open, but for a fraction of the price, Ash has now made a course. And this is probably the most valuable set of information and quickest way to move along your learning curve. So if you are interested in actively investing in commercial real estate, in retail, in industrial, in office, I would recommend this course to you. We're going to include a pre-sale link both in the show notes. It'll also be on the surgeonsyndicate.com website. And in your checkout, we'll save you another 1%. I know it's not a lot, but every little bit helps if you use the discount code MIKE1487. So take that step now and move your future forward. If you're not interested in investing actively, give us a call here at Fortress Capital. And let's talk about what your goals are as a passive investor. But it's time to stop listening, start acting, and let's move your future forward. This has been an episode of Surgeon Syndicate. If you found value in this episode, know other surgeons are hungry to become job optional. You can help them by sharing this content today. I also want to serve you better, so I want to offer you two things. Number one, I'll be able to give you the content in an even better way if you can take a moment and leave an honest review of the show explaining what you like and what you don't. Number two, If you are a surgeon and serious about this, you don't want to do this on your own because you don't want to make mistakes with your money. I'd be happy to help. Schedule a call. We can make a plan. Looking forward to having you with me on the next episode.